Oh, brother. Anybody here have a sibling? Yeah, okay. I mean, there are probably a few only children here, yeah. But a lot of us have siblings. This story represents what we call the brother problem. We could call it the sibling problem, but it's most represented most of the time in the Bible in brother stories. And here's a secret. These stories, they're not limited to the Bible. They appear in every religion. You know, if anybody here, anybody ever read the Bhagavad Gita or any other parts of the Mahabharata? You know, that's one book in the Mahabharata, which is this epic poem. It's the longest epic poem ever, and it's this huge, and the whole thing is about this massive battle, and that's all cousins, right? And the Bhagavad Gita itself takes place in this suspended bit of time in the middle, literally in the middle of a battle. And it's all, and that's all cousins. But this story happens in chapter 4 of Genesis. For those of you who are a little less familiar with the Bible, Genesis is the very first book, right? It's Genesis, the beginning, right? So this is the very beginning. It's a creation story, or it's right after the creation story. And it's about two brothers fighting. And these brother problems, these brother stories, they just keep appearing, right? We see Abraham, who has two sons, Ishmael and Isaac, and Ishmael and Isaac don't fight themselves, but their mothers find a way to get into it and force strife upon them. And Isaac has two sons, Esau, Jacob and Esau, and they get into it. And Jacob has 12 sons and one daughter. And, you know, as brothers do, the 10 older brothers sell Jacob into slavery and tell their father he was attacked by wild animals and killed. Because, you know, you do that as brothers. And that's just all in Genesis, right? I mean, we haven't even gotten to all the rest of the Bible yet. Why do you suppose this stuff is in the Bible and in all these other religions? Because it's about us. Because this is how we are. These are stories about humanity. You know, the creation story in the Bible is unique among ancient Near Eastern creation myths. And all religion is based on a mythology, and I'm going to step out of sermon mode here and delve just a little bit into lecture mode. I don't usually like to do this in a sermon, but you know, we tend to use myth as this in common parlance now is this, oh, myth is that's an untruth and a thing. But really what myth is a larger-than-life story, usually connected with a religion or something, but it's a larger-than-life thing with larger-than-life characters, and it's not a bad thing. So when I talk about myth and religion, it's not like, oh, myth, that's wrong, that's untrue, right? So are we clear on that? Okay, back to the story. So these creation myths, The biblical creation myth was unique in the ancient Near East in that it didn't involve some kind of violent overthrow of parents, right? The Enuma Elish, and you've all read that, right? Maybe not, okay. But that involved Tiamat and Marduk. Marduk is Tiamat's son, and Marduk, you know, cleaves Tiamat, his mother, in half to, whoa. And maybe you're familiar with some mythology like Greek mythology, the ancient Greek gods. So there are the Olympic gods who overthrew the Titanic gods. Right? The world is rife with these stories of family upon family and sibling upon sibling because, well, perhaps it's in our nature. Anybody here ever get in a fight with a sibling? I see I'm not the only one. So perhaps it is in our nature. So I want you to take just a couple of minutes and to turn to somebody near you. And you get extra points if it's somebody that you're not super familiar with, but it's okay if it's somebody you already know. And you don't have to bare your soul. You don't have to talk about the worst fight ever. But just take a couple minutes and talk about a time that you got into a thing with a sibling, or if you're an only child, maybe a cousin or a close, you know, some relative, something that when you got into something with somebody. So talk amongst yourselves. Let's see if we can share some of those stories. And if you have to get into threes, that's okay. And I'm going to call you back. All right. So I'm sure you can tell way more about these, and you can continue these conversations downstairs. But just from the buzz, I'm getting that there are lots of stories of this. You have some experience. Is that right? Yes, okay. It appears to be in our nature. And we take this beyond just our families, do we not? We take this, and a lot of it, now how many of your stories had to do with arguments over a resource, the last cookie, the better, right? So there are a few hands, and we would call that a mindset of scarcity, right? There isn't enough, and I want all, or he took the last, or she got the bigger, or so-and-so gets two, and I didn't get two, right? We take that into the larger world, don't we? Right? Our president has been saying, they're going to take all our jobs. Instead of saying, hey, if people come here and build more, there'll be more jobs to go around. Right? If somebody comes here, that person's going to make me unsafe. Instead of saying, hey, there'll be more people to stand with me, to stand with us and make us all safer together. The mindset of keeping someone else out instead of inviting more in to be together. Do you see where I'm going with that? There's scarcity, there's his half of the sandwich is bigger. Who grew up in a family where, okay, one of you cuts it in half and the other one gets to choose first, right? Which is brilliant, because then you're, when you pour the milk, it has to be exactly even, right? But we carry that with us into the larger world. And then it finds its way into our mythos. And into these stories. And why do you suppose it's in there? Because maybe we could learn something from it if we see it back at us. So what can we learn? Well, here's Cain. Who's angry? Is he angry at Abel? He's not angry at Abel. He's angry at God. He's angry at God. But he takes it out. Can he go and punch God? No, so he goes and kills Abel. God has invited Cain into conversation, but he takes it out on Abel. Have we ever gotten into conflict in the church here? Today, Mark asks. I hope not today. I hope for the hour that we've been here this morning, not today. But, you know, we've been doing this history project. We started doing this history project, and I encourage you to fill in on the timeline downstairs. And I noticed that people have been a little reluctant. People will talk a little about the conflicts but don't want to write it down on the timeline, as if we write it down, then it means it really happened. Well, it really did happen. And can we talk about it? We're grown-ups, yeah? Can we talk about it? It really happened. Cain Cain and Abel, I'll clue you in here. It's true, but it didn't really happen. And the people who wrote it knew that it didn't really happen. It's in there to teach us a lesson. But we can write down things that really happened and talk, because can we learn from them? I hope we can, just as we're learning from these stories. So we can write down the conflicts that really happened. And I've learned some really interesting conflicts. You've told me some of them. These are your stories to share, not mine. We have interesting conflicts in the world. And what happens when we don't tell the stories of the conflicts in the world? They happen again. We keep doing them. We keep doing them. When was the first time that we used the phrase America first? Anybody know? When was it? World War II, just before World War II, 1939. It was to keep the Jews out. The Jews from Europe who were being persecuted. Oh, no, it was all the same arguments that we're using now. If we don't remember that history, we repeat it. If we don't remember our own history in the church, we repeat it. So why is this our nature? Why are we so messed up? Well, I'll say, in my theology, I think it's because God needs us to be fully human and fully in relationship with God and each other, and that includes messiness. Oh, Dave Fazer, I hear you. But I'm an atheist. I don't believe in God. So what good does that do me? Well, for Dave and for the rest of you if you don't believe in God, well then, you know, if you're an atheist, you got to say, well, nature made us this way, and we can be better than this, or whatever your theology is, you have to translate, because we do that as you use, right? We can translate from each other. So you translate whatever I'm telling you what my theology teaches me, but you can translate into your theology. If this is our nature, we also know better. We can overcome this. We've written down these stories for thousands of years because we know that we can do better. We know that we can do better. We can do better with our siblings. When I was 10 years old, I didn't want anything to do with my baby brother. But I love to see him now. And my nephews. I've learned to do better. We can do better in our communities. We can do better in church. How many of you have ever not assumed good intentions? I mean, I'll admit to that. That person did that thing on purpose to that person didn't, right? But we can overcome things like that. We can, I can take a step back and say, maybe that wasn't on purpose, and I'll be happier for it. I'll be happier for it. And we can do it in the world, too. Maybe they, whoever they are, don't all want to come here and steal my job. Maybe I can have a new way of thinking and seeing. One of my favorite theologians, Walter Wink, wrote a book in the 80s called Engaging the Powers, and he talks about how we're kind of primed to think about a zero-sum game, right? There has to be a winner and a loser. And he talks about the myth of redemptive violence. And I love my superheroes, but they're full of redemptive violence, right? We have to, you know, it's okay to bash up the bad guys because we're on the side of right. But he talks about seeing things in a new way, in terms of win-win, and not beating up the other side. Ooh. What would the world look like if we moved toward that? What would the church look like if we moved toward that? All things that we're going to be talking about for the rest of February, things to think about here. Where do we start? Clearly on the world stage. Let's bite, but no, maybe not. Maybe not. We start at home. We start at home. This brother problem, it's been going on. Well, since there were brothers and sisters, since the world began. It's a constant struggle. Are we up for it? Are we up for it?
Yes.
We are up for it. We can do this together. We can do this together. Because when God or whomever your higher power or however you understand the world to be, whatever in your theology, invites us into dialogue, let us remember the thing to do is not to remain silent and then go kill Abel. The thing to do is to then enter into the dialogue. Let us enter into the dialogue together. Namaste.